Hey there. Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. Today's message comes from the book of Mark. The book of Mark tells the story of the life and impact of Jesus of Nazareth, the most influential human in the history of the world. It's our hope that through this message, you'll be able to either find God or follow him more closely. For more information about our church, to join a summer collective, attend a service, or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com. Also, happy Mother's Day to all you ladies out there. We want to show you that we love you. So this week, we want you to enjoy a Starbucks drink on us. Text coffee cup, that's one word, coffee cup, to 97000, and we will send you the details. We see you, we love you, and we celebrate you this week. Thank you for all that you do.
Well, hey, my name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here at Three Creeks Church. We are re-recording this message because we had some technical difficulties on Sunday, May the 9th. The reason that we are re-recording this is we believe that this message is foundational to the rest of the messages that we're going to give this summer. And so we really wanted anyone who couldn't be there on Sunday to be able to hear this. It kind of lays a foundation for where we're heading. We're going to be all summer in a brand new series, and the series is called simply The Gospel of Mark. We are going to go through the whole book of Mark over the next 16 weeks. There are 16 chapters in Mark, and we're going to be here for 16 weeks. If you're anything like me at all, you go, that just makes sense. Like, I like things that line up. And so we are going to spend 16 weeks in the Gospel of Mark. Mark is one of the four Gospels, one of the first four books of the New Testament. Matthew, you've probably heard a lot about Matthew. If you've ever tried reading the New Testament, you started in Matthew. It's written to the Jews. Luke is the third book of the New Testament. It's the third Gospel. Luke was a doctor. He wrote with great detail. If you're somebody who wants to just know the story of Jesus, the first book I would point you to is Luke. And then John, the fourth book, the fourth gospel, it's this theological view of who Jesus was, that he really was God in the flesh. And so Mark kind of is, just by default, maybe the least popular of the four gospels. Mark was written to the Romans. We know that because there's not very many references to the Old Testament. Why? Well, because Romans didn't care about the Old Testament. It meant nothing to them. There's not a lot of quotations. Jesus doesn't talk a lot. Mark doesn't quote Jesus a lot. Mark talks about what Jesus did, not so much what he said. Because the Romans, they want to know, who is this man moving through the wilderness being followed by thousands of people? Who is this guy? How did this happen? And so Mark writes the book of Mark to essentially answer the question, and he says, allow me to introduce you to the most influential man in the history of the world, Jesus of Nazareth. You see, Mark, I talked to a couple people leading up to this past Sunday, and I said, what do you know about Mark? And these are people who are seasoned Christians. They know their Bibles pretty well. I said, what do you know about Mark? I said, was Mark a disciple? And they go, I don't think so. And they start kind of going in their mind, like naming off the disciples, Peter, Andrew, you know, and they go, Mark's not in. And so Mark is this character that we've heard his name a lot because Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but a lot of us don't know a lot about the person of Mark. So let me tell you four, what I consider to be very, very interesting things about this person who wrote the book of Mark. He's also known as John Mark. First thing that I found interesting is that he grew up in Jerusalem. His mom's name was Mary. And listen to this, the Last Supper, the meal that Jesus had with his 12 disciples, the last meal before he was betrayed and hung on a cross, that Last Supper, that happened in Mark's house. Mark was probably just a teenager at the time. He probably was trying to, you know, put his ear up to the door and hear what Jesus and his disciples were saying. Mark's house would have been where that meal was. And after the death and the resurrection and the ascension of Jesus, one of the house churches in Jerusalem was at Mark's house. And so Mark's mom was a community group leader. That's Mark's family. Another interesting thing about Mark is that he wasn't one of Jesus' disciples. In fact, he wasn't even an eyewitness of everything that he wrote about. How did he know what happened then? How did he know what to write? For as soon as Jesus ascended into heaven, the disciples started going out and preaching and teaching what Jesus said and telling stories about what Jesus did. And Mark traveled with Peter, Jesus' closest friend. And as Peter preached, Mark took notes. Mark wrote it down. So the Gospel of Mark is essentially Peter's sermon notes. Nobody on the earth was closer to Jesus than Peter. Mark, listen to this. Does anybody know who Mark's cousin was? Mark's cousin was a guy named Barnabas. And if you've been around church, that name might sound familiar to you, but you might not know any more about Barnabas than you do about Mark. Let me tell you about this. So after Jesus again dies, resurrects, ascends into heaven, the disciples go and start preaching everywhere. Well, the one person who took the gospel of Jesus the furthest was a guy named Paul. And Paul had this band of brothers. He had Timothy, he had Silas, he had Barnabas, and he had his cousin Mark, or John Mark. And what's interesting is Paul, you know, he's kind of famous for taking these three big missionary journeys. On the first missionary journey, Mark was with the team. Mark was with Paul as he traveled around. And something happened, and we don't know what it was, but Mark left the team. Mark, in Paul's words, deserted them. And so I know this comes as a shock to a lot of people that are listening, but yes, Christians can fight. Good people that love Jesus can fight. Their fight was so intense that when Mark asked to go on the second trip, Paul said no. And so Paul and Silas went their way, and Barnabas and Mark went another way. They both just kind of agreed to disagree. What I love about the story, though, is that yes, Christians fight, but when Paul, at the end of his life, is writing this letter to Timothy, he writes at the end of the letter in chapter 4, "Get Mark, bring him with you. He's helpful to me in my ministry." He calls him a fellow worker. He doesn't see Mark as this person that he has a grudge against, but at some point in time, apparently, these two reconciled. They saw one another with gospel lenses. They forgave one another, and they became friends again. I just found that to be so interesting. And then this one, I just had no idea. But in studying for this message, I found this out about the person of Mark and the gospel of Mark. I think that you will find this incredibly interesting. So Mark, for 1900 years, Mark was considered the gospel that was written fourth. And then after 1900 years, because of, I don't even know who decided to put forth the idea, Bible scholars all over the world essentially unanimously changed their mind, and they said, no, we believe that Mark was actually the first book that was written, the first gospel, and it was written in 55 AD. Now, why is that important? Well, think about this. Mark's in Rome. He's writing to the Romans. A lot of Christians live in Rome, and a lot of Christians are beginning to be persecuted for their faith in Rome. And so the jury's out. Will these Christians hold on to this truth of Jesus? Will they hold on to it even to their death? Mark writes the Gospel of Mark right at this time. The emperor of Rome at the time, his name is Claudius. He was the emperor until 54 AD. And Claudius married four women. The fourth person that he married was Agrippa the Younger. And he had a bunch of other kids with his first three wives, but Agrippa the Younger wanted her son to be the next emperor, and so she sends her son to kill the sons of Claudius's other wives. That son's name, young Agrippa the Younger's son's name, was Nero. Nero becomes the emperor. Nero becomes the most famous persecutor of Christians in the history of the world. He burns the bodies of Christians to light up his parties. And so this book of Mark is writing this to the Christians who are living in Rome. They literally are facing life and death. And I imagine that it's the words of Mark, the stories that Mark wrote down, that are coursing through the minds of people as they're being killed for their faith in Jesus. Who is this man moving through the wilderness, being followed by thousands of people? Mark is saying, he is Jesus of Nazareth, and he is God. Allow me to introduce you to him. He is worth it, because he is God. We're going to be here for 16 weeks. We're going to cover 16 chapters. Now, a lot of the chapters are pretty long, and so we're not going to get to go through every single verse, but every single week, the speaker, whoever's teaching that particular week, is going to pick out one of the four, five, or six stories that occur in each chapter. If you notice, as you read through Mark, you can hardly even catch your breath, because Mark just goes from story to story to story. It's like boom, boom, boom. Like, you just kind of, you're trying to catch up, keep up with Mark as he writes his book. And so today, we're going to be in Mark chapter 1, and we're going to be in verses 16 through 20. And I just want to read it to you once, I'll tell you the story, and then I'm going to go back through and dig a little bit deeper into the story together. Verse 16 of Mark chapter 1 says this: "One day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. Jesus called out to them, 'Come, follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people.' And they left their nets at once and followed him. A little further up the shore, Jesus saw Zebedee's sons, James and John, in a boat repairing their nets. He called them at once, and they also followed him, leaving their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men." Let me read you the beginning of verse 16 one more time. It says, "One day, as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee." The Sea of Galilee is 7 miles wide, 12 miles long. It's pretty big, but you can see across it, and it is absolutely beautiful. I mean, a couple years ago, my wife and I, we got to go and be at the Sea of Galilee. It is teeming with fish. The Sea of Galilee would have been a place where there's a lot of roads in, a lot of roads out. It's a place where business is done. Business is done in the shores of the Sea of Galilee. I mean, it is the place to be. And the rumors of Jesus have begun to circulate a little bit. He hasn't done a lot of miracles yet. Not a lot of people have seen him. They've just begun to hear stories about him. The masses aren't quite drawn to him yet, but people are beginning to be curious about Jesus, and he's walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee. You know, I'm reading that and going, it seems to me like he's alone. There are a lot of other stories in Mark where it says that Jesus is walking and thousands of people were with him, and Mark leaves that out. And so I imagine that Jesus is walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, perhaps by himself, certainly not with a big crowd. In verse 16, keeps going, it says, "He saw Simon and his brother Andrew throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living." These guys were probably teenagers, and they were probably jacked, because fishing was not for the small or the shy. Another name that Jesus actually gives Simon later on is the name Peter. People call him Simon Peter. Why did Jesus call him Peter? He was Jesus's first disciple. And in Greek, the name Petros means the rock. And so when you think of Peter, you just think of Dwayne Johnson. He is great, but Jesus thought of the nickname first. That's Simon Peter. And they fished for a living. They were fishermen. If you wanted to be a fisherman, this was the place to be. This is where the fish were at. There's another village just down the shore from where these guys were at called Magdala, and that literally means Fishville. Okay, so this is where, if you're a fisherman, you've got to live at the Sea of Galilee. Their boat would have been about 23 feet long. So put two basketball hoops down, you know, one of them, another one, add three more feet. You kind of get the idea. It's not the longest boat in the world, but it's not short either. It could hold up to 11 people, or up to 1,000 pounds of fish. And usually these guys would fish all night. Their nets weren't nylon like the net that you can go buy at Dick's Sporting Goods. The nets were thicker, and so fish in the day, they could just see it and just swim around it. And so a lot of times these guys would fish at night. And so the chances are these guys are just coming in from fishing. In verse 17, Jesus calls out to them, "Come, follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people." I just imagine Simon and his brother Andrew being like, "Fish for people? That's illegal. Like, you can't fish for people." They say, "We fish for fish, Jesus." And he says, "No, come fish for people." What would you have done in a situation like that? Look what they do in verse 18. "And they left their nets at once and followed him." They just drop their nets, like right there, immediately, at once. They just follow Jesus. This is not a proven thing that they are stepping into. This is a risky endeavor by all accounts. And so Jesus and Simon, Peter, and Andrew now, they're walking along the shore together, perhaps just three of them. And look what it says in verse 19. "A little farther up the shore, Jesus saw Zebedee's sons, James and John, in a boat repairing their nets." Two more teenagers, James and John. Eventually, Jesus gives them a nickname. It's my favorite nickname in all the Bible. He calls James and John Boanerges, which literally means sons of thunder. I'm like, man, if somebody's going to give me that nickname, I'll follow him too. That's a great nickname. James and John, they're with their dad, Zebedee. And their dad taught them everything that they know about fishing. And they're clearly ready to take over the family business when Zebedee retires. Simon and Andrew would have known James and John. These guys went into the water together. They came out of the water every day together. They'd sort fish in the morning together, and they'd compete to sell their fish in the market in the afternoon. These guys would have been familiar with one another. And Jesus does the same thing to them. He called them at once. Verse 20. "And they also followed him, leaving their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men." What do you think Zebedee's thinking? "Boys, I'm trying to lead you to something that will make you financially secure. What are you doing? You can't leave me here." But James and John followed Jesus. See, here's the thing. Knowing what we know now, knowing how the rest of the book of Mark goes, knowing what we know now, they clearly made the right decision. But in that moment, they had no idea what was about to happen. The risk that they incurred in doing this. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, think about this. Jesus said, "Come follow me," and they didn't ask questions. They didn't need to know all the answers. They dropped what made them financially secure. They abandoned what they were known for. They abandoned what they're good at. They drop what gives them their identity. They leave their family behind. They abandon what is reliable, what they could count on, just so that they could follow Jesus. Verse 18 again says, "They left their nets at once and followed him." See if you can follow me here for a second. What are your nets? What are your stinky fish nets? What are the things that you're holding on to? Stinky fish nets are things in our lives that prevent us from wholeheartedly following Jesus. What is it that might be a proverbial stinky fish net in your life? What is it that you might need to drop so that you can wholeheartedly follow Jesus? What are you holding on to that holds you back from being all in with Jesus? It could be a way that you're spending your time. Could be a way that you're spending your money. Could be a hobby. Could be a relationship. Could be a bad habit. Could be just this attitude where, like, I need to know all the answers. Like, I can't go all in until I have everything figured out. Could be that. The beauty of this question is that no matter where you're at on your spiritual journey, it's a great question. Because whether you've been interested in following Jesus for 30 minutes or you've been following him for 50 years, it's still a great question. The stinky fishnets might be big things, might be small things. But, you know, stinky fishnets have a way of, you know, let's just say, for example, a time in the past where you have dropped a bad habit. You have dropped a relationship so that you could follow Jesus. More stinky fishnets have a way of creeping their way slyly into your life and preventing you from following Jesus. You know, when I read this story, what comes to mind is that at first, before they were able to follow Jesus, they had to drop something. And I think a lot of times I've gone to church or a camp or retreat, I hear a speaker and they inspire me or they challenge me. And my takeaway is that I'm supposed to add something into my life. I'm supposed to read my Bible more. I'm supposed to have a time of prayer. I'm supposed to serve in my church. I'm supposed to be a better husband. And I go home excited about adding something into my life. And then I get home and it's like, where's that going to fit? Because my life is already packed full of stuff. And this story illuminates the need for us to drop things before we can add things in. Let me just explain how this works very practically for me. I'm in this season of life where I've got three kids and, they're up at 7 and they go down at 7:30. I try to spend time with my wife, Morgan, from 7:30 to 10. And so I just kind of feel like at this point in my life, and I'm not complaining about it, I love it. But I've got about 1 hour a day that I get to decide what I want to do, right? I've either got to choose 6 to 7 a.m. or I've got to choose 10 to 11 p.m. The way that I feel led at the moment in this season of my life to follow Jesus is to spend time with him, to spend time praying with him, to spend time reading my Bible. And for me, that's best done. It's most effective. I feel like I'm really in a relationship with God when that's from 6 to 7 in the morning. The problem is that I have this bad habit where from 10 to 11 at night, I waste my time. I scroll on my phone. I watch YouTube videos. I look to the right and I go, oh, that video looks interesting. And I click it. And before I know it, it's past 11 o'clock and I'm tired. I'm just a lot less likely to get up at 6 in the morning. And it's not necessarily a day-to-day correlation, but certainly week to week, you know, if I'm spending 10 to 11 at night wasting my time, the chances of me getting up from 6 to 7 are way down. But if I have the discipline to turn off my lamp and to plug in my phone and just let it be, shut it down at 10 o'clock, well, over the course of time, it just gets a lot easier for me to wake up from 6 to 7 in the morning. And so for me, before I'm trying to add something into my life, I've realized that I need to drop something before I can do that. And so, you know, very practically, if you're going, man, I just feel like I should serve more at church. Well, first, you might want to drop the way that you're spending Saturday nights or weekends in general. You just might have some habits in your life where you go, this is not conducive with serving at church. So adding serving at church into that, I don't know that that's going to go very well. You go, I just want to add this time of prayer. That's what it would look like for me to wholeheartedly follow Jesus. Well, before you add in prayer, you might want to delete that app. You go, man, I want to be a better husband. I'm going to do more dishes. I'm going to do more laundry. I'm going to just help with the kids even more. I'm going to change more diapers. Before you go and just try to add all of that in, perhaps you need to delete something else that's in your life. You have 5 fantasy football teams. Maybe 4 is enough. I feel like I had to say that on Mother's Day. You guys, listen, Christianity, being a Jesus follower, being a Christian is a terrible hobby. It is a horrible hobby. If you just want to kind of do it casually from time to time, it just ends up feeling like a bunch of rules. You feel guilty all the time. It's terrible. But when you go all in, when you drop all the nets, everything that's holding you back, and you follow Jesus with your whole heart, it's a new way to live. It's a new way to be a husband. It's a new way to be a wife. It's a new way to be a parent. It's a new way to work. Jesus said, I came that you may have life and life to the full. And you only get this full life when you drop your nets in faith and follow Jesus. If you leave behind the things that hold you back. And what's very tricky about these things is that they're not all bad things. Some of them are good things. Some of them are great things. They're gifts from God. Not all of the nets that you need to drop are bad things. But if it's something that holds you back from wholeheartedly following Jesus, you still need to drop it. You still need to drop it. And life to the full is ahead. Because again, think about these guys. Knowing what we know now about how the rest of the book of Mark goes, these guys made the right decision. There's really no question, but in that moment, they had no idea what was going to happen. And I spent some time this past week just reading through the rest of the book of Mark, and I just go, I would just pay billions of dollars to switch places with them. I mean, they just made the right move. They're witnessing people who can't hear for the first time, people who can't see for the first time, people who can't speak for the first time. I mean, knowing what we know now, they made the right decision. They experienced this wild adventure with Jesus because they dropped their nets and followed him. They did it. You know, I was just imagining that there were like a few more verses at the end of this story. You know, if Jesus goes down the shore, he goes, Simon, Andrew, follow me. And they do. They drop their nets and they follow him. And then I imagined he goes down and goes, James, John, follow me. And they do. They drop their nets and they follow him. And we go, brilliant move. And then I just like imagined, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but I did it anyways. Imagine there's like two or three more verses. And Jesus kept going down the shore with Simon and Andrew and James and John with him. And he saw two more men, fishermen, two more young guys, Barry and Steve. And he said, Barry, Steve, come fish for men. Follow me. But Barry raised his hand and said, no thanks. I like it how it is. We're good. Y'all have fun. But we're okay. We're going to stick to fishing. This is what we're good at. And Steve said, thank you so much for the invitation. But we are good to go. We know what we're doing. This is kind of what we do. And so you guys take the risk. You guys drop the nets. But we're going to kind of just stay here and do this. See, the people on the shore, if they had witnessed that happen, they would have been clapping for Barry and Steve. These guys are wise. These guys know what they're talking about. Simon and Andrew, James and John, they're crazy. Giving up security to follow Jesus. Whew. But knowing what we know now, we would know that Barry and Steve were idiots. That Barry and Steve missed out on the greatest adventure ever. And so with that thought in mind, given the fact that we do know what happens next, we do know who Jesus is, we do know what Jesus did. You guys, we've got to drop the nets. What comes to mind when I say, what is holding you back from wholeheartedly following Jesus? What is in your life that prevents you from wholeheartedly following Jesus? That is what you need to drop, and dropping stuff is hard. I don't like change any more than you do. I like things how they are. I like my relationships how they are. I like my job how it is. I just like things how they are. But sometimes you got to drop the net so that you can follow Jesus with your whole heart and experience this life and life to the full. You see, there's this act of faith before you have all your questions answered that is required if you're going to follow Jesus. For the next, 15 weeks after this one, we're going to keep going through Mark. And at the end of each message, we're going to ask you one question, give you a second to think about it. The question is simply this. Are there any stinky fishnets in your life that you could identify? And are you willing to drop them? Are you willing to drop them? I leave you with that question. At Three Creeks Church on Sunday mornings, we have a prayer team that's available in the very back of the auditorium. We're not going to touch you. We're going to stay masked. But we just want to pray with you. And they'll be there every week from here on out. Also, you know, it's Mother's Day. I know that this is a couple days late, but for those of you that are listening to the podcast and you weren't in person, we were able to give away some free Starbucks in person. But just because you're listening to the podcast, we don't want you to feel left out. You are a part of this church family. And so we want to make it available to you too. So if you text the words coffee cup, one word, coffee cup, to 97,000, it will shoot you a link so that you can get a free Starbucks drink on us, just to say thank you to all the ladies out there. If you are a male, I will reject you. You are not allowed to do that. But for all the ladies that are out there, we love you, we celebrate you, and we can't wait to see you in person, and we hope you enjoy a cup of coffee on us this week. Three Creeks, I love you. Chapter 2 next week. We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening. For more information about our church or weekly services, joining a group or a team, or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com.